I know Paula Harris knows him. Is he speaking on behalf of himself or the Vatican?
He will be the keynote speaker at the X conference, and he is always officially speaking for himself. That's how he always puts it. I would simply recommend if someone is interested to please, go to x-conference.com and just look it up. And I really want to for people to know and for them to support this because, this man is now toward the end of his life. Americans have not really had much of an opportunity to hear him, to hear what he has to say. So I think it's just a wonderful opportunity.
And he may be speaking through a translator. I think Paul has said he doesn't speak English at all.
There will be a translator, and it's just going to be at the end of April in D.C.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. No, my pleasure. I love UFO stories, and every time I get a fascinating guest on, such as yourself, Richard, who is in on the know and has done some homework, I always ask them to give me their very favorite UFO story. Do you have one?
Well, yeah, I guess I do. There's one of those UFO stories, like when I was researching my book in particular, there were just a few of them that I would just look at these reports and just go like, whoa. And it happened for me in looking at these government documents. I mean, the way that I put my book together was to try to piece together a very logical, easily confirmable paper trail. And so there are a lot of stories that are actually much more far out than even the ones that I included, but I really tried to be cautious in the sense. But there were a number of these U.S. memos. We got a lot of them through the Freedom of Information Act, in particular when that act was actually in its prime in the late 1970s, when it was really possible to get some good documents out. It's much more difficult now. But there were a variety of airspace violations over U.S. bases and U.S. sensitive installations. And there's one, for example, that took place over the Oak Ridge nuclear facility in 1953. And this is a quote from one such report. This is a classified report that describes this object that came over Oak Ridge. And Oak Ridge is a big deal. I mean, they developed the atomic bomb there.
Of course.
You don't just hang out over Oak Ridge. And
this is a real report.
This is a real report. And this is just one. I'm hunting this. Here we go. A quote from the official report. It says, "Object was extremely black in color." This is 1953. "Having an appearance of a deep black metal exterior with a fine gloss, it did not leave a vapor trail. No sound was heard. The object flew east at a tremendous speed for what appeared to be 3 miles, where it stopped. The object was then joined by two more of these same objects. A formation similar to a spread V was formed, and the objects, at a tremendous speed, flew in an eastward direction."
I love it.
That's just like, wow. That's over 50 years ago.
Now, who wrote the report? Do you know that? Or title or anything like that?
Yeah, this was a confidential memo, and this is from the it's a memo from the Oak Ridge facility.
So somebody there, maybe a security guard or a soldier, somebody there.
Yeah, and it was directed to the Adjutant General of the United States Military in Washington, D.C.
That's an incredible piece of documentation.
Now, right, and this is 1953. At the same time, of course, you've got the government telling people that there's nothing to this.
And we don't have stealth technology in 1953. We don't have these airships that we have today.
Right, it's amazing. This actually was from the third commanding general. It went through. It was from the Tennessee Military District in Nashville is where it originated from. And it actually just went around the chain, this report.
See, to me, Richard, that's a major story. That's a front-page New York Times story.
Exactly. When I was writing my book, George, I had this wonderfully naive idea. I thought, well, if I can only just put the facts together in a clear way, be kind of like a sledgehammer approach, maybe, just maybe, that will make a difference, and people will get some publicity, and people will see that this is an inarguable reality. And of course, I feel rather instead that I'm just howling into a vacuum because you can just talk, and there are always people who will listen. But as far as the larger, the mainstream media, it just doesn't happen. And the funny thing was, you know, the day of the Peter Jennings ABC special,
yeah.
here in Rochester, New York, where I live, I was interviewed by local media. So the local ABC affiliate came to my home to interview me in preparation for the special, you know, local UFO expert Richard Dolan, that type of thing. So I got 90 seconds, and I gave these people gold, George. laid gold at their feet and said, here's a great bit of information. Here's something else that's great. More than an hour, and they took 90 seconds and just hacked me to bits. it was, so they went in with a certain slant. It was obvious.
Welcome to television.
You bet. And so this is how you feel. You know, I've got, gathered a tremendous amount of great information. And it's a challenge. You know, you've got to get people to listen. And
wouldn't it be great to have on tape or on the radio or some kind of backup that person who witnessed those three objects and who wrote that report for the general?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, there are so many people today who are as intelligent and as reliable as the witnesses of that particular report. And you've spoken to many of them, and so have I. I remember a couple of years ago I was going through the website of the National UFO Reporting Center, organized by Peter Davenport,
yeah.
which was featured on the ABC special. And there was one sighting of a triangular craft. We were talking about the TR-3B on the last segment. I was doing a lot of triangle research in particular at that time, hunting down triangle reports that Peter Davenport had collected. And there was one from just across the lake here in Rochester in Ontario. A woman who, in January of 2002, was driving home from work, and a triangle came right over her car, and she said, like, right over.
Yeah.
Totally silent, and just, you know, went right off. I had gotten in touch with this woman through Peter, and have since really chatted quite a lot with her. And, you know, all I can say is she is absolutely 100% reliable. There's no question in anyone's mind who would talk to this person that she absolutely positively saw what she did. And this object, in addition to just looking unlike anything that's supposed to exist, did things that just, you know, you wouldn't expect from any ordinary aircraft.
The question is, was it theirs or ours?
That is the question. And one thing, you know, there's a very strong tendency for a lot of people in this field to say, oh, well, a lot of those are ours. And I would not deny that possibility, but I will say this. One thing that I learned when I kind of dived into this field is that I would develop, you know, a variety of contacts, or, you know, at the classified level myself. Not that I'm an insider in any way. I'm certainly not. But every now and then I would glean the conversations going on in that world, every now and then. I think a lot of UFO researchers are in this situation. And one thing that struck me, there were two things. One was that people within the intelligence world who were truly in the know, they first thing is they took E.T. for granted. So they took the E.T. reality here on Earth as a given. And that, initially for me, was a startling kind of revelation. But the other thing was that there was a debate, at least among several of them, and these are high-level people, and the debate was not, is E.T. real, but rather, can we duplicate their technology? And there was one individual, for example, who said, you know, my sources tell me that, we've got some toys to play with, but we can't really duplicate this stuff. And another guy shot back, essentially, you know, what are you, under a rock? We've had this capability for a number of years, and in fact, so did the Soviets. And back and forth it goes, and both of these people are quite prominent. And, you know, reading these and following these debates, it's very difficult for me to know for sure where the truth is. My feeling is we've got some of this stuff.
I think we've got some.
Do we truly have all of it? I don't know.
I'm not sure. You know, if we plopped a helicopter down on people 2,000 years ago, I'm not sure they'd be able to figure it out, Richard, or make one. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right, right.
And,
exactly.
And it's the same with us. I mean, even though we have a higher form of technology, I'm not sure we'd understand it right now. Let's come back in a moment. And when we do, Richard, let's assume that for a second we are alone in this universe. It's kind of a lonely feeling. I want to get your take on that and some other stories about the national security state, UFOs, and explain the cover-up. It occurred in 1941, maybe even before that. We'll find out. I'll be back.